Good afternoon, and good afternoon. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Ask Sharifa Videocast. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. We're going to speak with a very special friend of mine. You have seen her on the Roundtable Talk Show. You've seen her on quite a few different things, I'm sure, just based on her bio and her information. Janine is someone you definitely want to pay attention to. She has always loved figuring out how things work. She's a scientist from the beginning. She craved to dig into the mysteries of life and understand why things are the way they are. After working in the pharmaceutical industry for 15 years, she dropped out of corporate America to homeschool her four children. She has always had a side business in her life and shares with other solopreneurs and business owners how to manage a well-lived life full of children, family, friends, and clients while not suffering from burnout. Her four-hour-a-week system keeps new clients coming in while you manage the clients you already have. Janine is the author of 9 books and produces 4 podcast programs, the latest of which is The Thriving Solopreneur. Please join me in welcoming Miss Janine to the show. Janine, good afternoon. I'm so excited to have you. When we spoke before, I only had a moment, so to sit down with you is incredible. How are you this afternoon, Janine?
We're doing very well, and I'm so grateful to finally be able to sit down and chat with you about the things I love, which is being able to help business owners do what they need to do.
And you have 4 podcasts, and it was so interesting because it's like the weirdest things stand out to me about guests as I think back. And one of the things that stood out to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, Janine, is I felt like you were like on these 3 podcasts. You were like, yeah, I'm the host. I do those. And then it was the 4th one where you were like, oh, and I have this other little podcast. I thought that was so interesting, or maybe I just imagined that.
No, you didn't imagine it. It was the very first one that I started on, which was the Practical Mystic Show. And that's the one, you know, we have to remember where we were. We were talking to all these business owners. That was the network that you were introducing me to. And so, yeah, I did kind of go, and I have this 4th one, because the Practical Mystic Show is for my shamans, tarot card readers, energy workers, light workers, those wonderful people who are making the world a better place one client at a time.
But that's me. That's what I feel like is me. I'm business, I'm entrepreneur, but I'm a 3rd generation tarot reader. So I always like, try to find that balance. Some people have considered me like an intuitive business consultant. I don't necessarily know if that's an accurate description, but I do know that I go with my gut. And I think to me, it has more to do with just getting older, because as life happens, you learn to trust your gut. You learn to trust, you know, yourself, or maybe that's just me.
No, a lot of people that I have run into that are business owners or have been business owners most of their life, like they always had a side hack or they always had a little something they did on the side. They have highly developed intuitive skills. But because it wasn't necessarily safe for them to talk about that, I've always said that those sorts of business owners actually are empaths. They just choose to say, I go with my gut or I go with what's going on. And it does keep us out of trouble, because being a entrepreneur is very risky venture. It takes quite a bit of courage, and you don't always know if everything's going to work out right. But if you're shaking someone's hand and you're working on a contract together and you have that feeling that, you know, there's something here not quite right. One of the ladies I absolutely love is Mary Kay Ash. And before she died, she would talk about the stories of she would always listen to that intuitive part, and that kept her out of trouble. Because this one gentleman who she was working with, come to find out the reason he was wanting to get into her employ and work with her business was because he had embezzled funds at another location. And so shaking his hand, he was very amiable, had all the qualifications, but she listened to her gut and chose to go with a different person, even though they were not as qualified, just based on her intuition. So I always recommend to people, follow your instincts.
And when you say Mary Kay Ash, is that the Mary Kay of Mary Kay Cosmetics?
Yes, the Mary Kay of Mary Kay Cosmetics. I study people who have done well. And a lot of people don't know, she started off selling wigs and makeup. She took $10,000 of her own money and initiated the Mary Kay group or business and built from there. She was cooking literally the cosmetics in her kitchen.
Wow. Wow. I did not know that, but I love following the entrepreneurial stories, how they got their start, where they began, what their journey was. And you can learn so much from it. One of my favorite stories, I have two favorites really. And I'm pretty sure you're at least familiar with Pike's Fish Market in Seattle. Like, I love that story. That is an example of a company who was going out of business, didn't have hope, turned it around. And now they teach other companies how to save or be sustainable with their business. So they turned it around. But one of my all-time favorites is Barney the Dinosaur. So I'm pretty sure you heard of Barney the Dinosaur, but did you know how they got started, Janine?
I have no idea. I'd love to hear that.
Okay, good, because I'm going to tell you. So what happened was the people who created Barney, the video for Barney the Dinosaur, they sent the video to large chain stores. They sent it to Target, Walmart. They sent it to all of them, and they said, here's our video. Will you carry it? And they came back to them, and they said, we don't need another little dancing dinosaur. We already have that. We don't want it. No, thank you. And most people, I believe, would have just stopped right then. They would have gave up, and they would have said, if they don't want me, then my product is no good. So instead, because they were determined, and what we understand in business is you have to create the demand. So they sent the Barney the Dinosaur video to daycares across America. And so the daycares played the video for the children. The children learned the songs, and they loved the little, I love you, you love me. And then the kids would go home and sing it to their parents. And the moms were like, where do I get this video? And the daycare's like, I don't know. They sent it to us. So the moms went to the stores and asked for Barney the Dinosaur. Stores didn't have it. Parents wanted it. Janine, what's next?
Well, the wonderful thing about what's next after that is you see your product really take off. But those are lovely stories. I enjoy them. I enjoy hearing them. But a lot of times you may be sitting there as a solopreneur and you really don't know, well, that's not going to fit my model because what I'm doing is a totally service-based organization, or what I am doing is not selling a product. I'm selling intellectual property. So this is where you can get a little weird on how do I go about moving forward with my business. And so that's where I really coach a lot of business owners on the 4-hour week system. And this was something that it took me a while to learn. So I have been a serial entrepreneur, as you were so kind to share. And I have been running a business since I was 10 years old. And one of the things that I have learned, I have run 17 businesses and 3 have failed epically. I mean, crash, burn, lost it all. But the thing that I always made sure is I never went into debt for my business, so that if it did crash and burn, I didn't lose the mortgage payment, or I always could pay the rent, okay? Because I was in both locations at one time or another. I was either renting my home or I was purchasing a home. So I just want to let you know, never go into debt for your business, no matter how other people may pressure you, that's what's needed. I was very stubborn that way. And of course, my businesses didn't grow as fast, but I believed in relationship management and relationship gathering of my clients. And so my businesses grow organically. So it may start off really, really slow for a while, but then you'll hit a logarithmic peak. But because you've built such strong foundations and you have systems in place, when you hit that logarithmic peak, when you have those moms banging on Target's door because they want Barney, your business can handle it. Why? Because you have that ability, because you have those foundations. But it took me a while to understand this concept that I heard in business all the time. And I know you've heard it. It's like, work on your business, not in your business. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I was always so frustrated because I was just like, I don't understand what you are saying to me. You're speaking English, but I don't understand. And so finally it clicked. Oh, what they're talking about is the time that you spend prospecting for new clients, the time that you're following up with potential people that are clients, when you are connecting with clients you already have, when you're fostering relationships or training your team. That is when you're working on the business as a CEO and not working in the business, producing the widgets or creating the online course or writing the book. And I went, mind opening, mind altering. And I was like, that's what they're talking about. Well, I'd been doing it for years. I just didn't have that cute little saying in my head that made it work. So those are the 4 hours a week that if every business owner does, you spend an hour a week prospecting, meeting new people, either on Facebook Messenger or LinkedIn. I prefer LinkedIn. That's my go-to. But, you know, you prospect that for an hour. You spend an hour a week doing follow-up, you know, from the previous 2 weeks before when you were talking to people, follow up in 2 weeks. Let them know you're still thinking of them. Did they give you the information you needed? Did you give them the information? That kind of thing. Then connecting. Get on that social media, book it for only an hour, and connect with people through the messenger services that are offered on either Instagram, Facebook, you know, whatever is your media platform of choice. And then that fourth hour a week, and this is the one most entrepreneurs don't quite put the time in that they need, and that is you need to train yourself. Read the next business book. Figure out that piece of software that you bought 6 months ago and you haven't had a chance to figure it out. Go ahead and look at the software you already own. A lot of times you're trying to solve a problem and you already have the resources there. You just haven't figured out all the widgets, options that is available to you. And this is where I spend an hour, sometimes just on YouTube, and I'll type in, how do I, and then fill in the blank of whatever my problem is that I'm trying to solve with the software I currently have. And so that's a really quick rundown of the 4 hour week system to help you continue to nurture your business into a growth model.
Wow, I'm taking notes. I'm pretty sure our audience is taking notes. I'm going to come back to this 4 hour work week because I have so many questions on that. But I want to go back to something you said. I think you tried to slip it in there on me, Janine, but you said you were 10 years old and you were an entrepreneur. And I always love to ask my serial entrepreneurs the same question. Like, were you that little kid who had the lemonade stand or were mowing the lawns? Or I had one lady I asked this question to and she just blew my mind. She was like 5 or 6. I forgot the age, but she would charge her friends to come in her backyard carnival. And I was like, why did you even come up with that? She was like, I don't know how I came up with it, but she would charge them like a nickel. And I'm like, but what's in this carnival? She was like, they could garden in there. They had this little ride that her father had made. I'm like, you're a kid. And you're like, look, if you give me money, I'll let you play in my backyard. So for you at 10 years old, two questions. What did you start off with? Number one, but number two, what gave you that idea?
Well, okay. So my very first business probably was 5 or 6. And yes, it was a lemonade stand, but I would always take local fruit because I lived on islands. I wasn't in the United States. So most people weren't used to lemonade in some of the country, some of the world that we were in. And so I'd have to add some of the local fruit. So I guess I was one of the first smoothie kind of operations at 6 years old. But at 10 years old, what was really important at that time was I sold earthworms, and my father had retired from the military.
Earthworms?
Yes, retired.
I have to hear this.
So my father retired from after 22 years of service in the military to southern Missouri, and we were about 10 miles from the Arkansas border. And I had overheard in a gas station while my dad was filling up these two old farmers sitting on the oil can crates. I mean, it's very stereotypical Midwest, the South, sitting there talking about how you went about getting night crawlers. And that's how they called them, night crawlers. And I had to ask my dad, what's a night crawler? I had no idea what they were talking about. Oh, my dad's like, they're talking about earthworms. And they said that if you poured water on the ground real close to where the pond was or your river or whatever, and you put a big piece of plywood down, the next morning when you'd come up and you could shovel them up, all those night crawlers would be real close to the surface. You could sift them out with a big old kind of colander or screen, and you could sell them to the local bait shop. And so I would sell them to the local bait shop for 50 cents a pound. That was my first business.
Did you have to touch them?
Oh, no, because if you shovel them into this big screen like sieve and then you could just wash them off. I had a big old plastic pitcher that my mom let me borrow, and I would take that pitcher and dump the river water over them. So I never really had to touch them. And then you dump them into a big 5 gallon paint bucket. Yeah, that's how I chose to transport my earthworms.
So how long did you do that? This is interesting. Because it may seem simple, but I mean, it's a mindset. And so you begin to learn where you got this mindset. So how long did you do that?
I did that until I got into high school. That's how I was able to buy my first car, I sold earthworms.
Yeah.
Christine, after you did that, then my dad said, you know, people will pay $10 a pound for earthworm casings, and I'll let you have all the manure from the rabbit hutches if you will scrape out the rabbit hutches. And so I built these, well, people would call them square foot gardens now, but what I was doing was I was actually harvesting earthworms using the manure from the rabbits, which is very organic, and having worms in there, and then I would sift out those earthworm casings and sell them for $10 a pound. So that went to the garden centers and gardeners and stuff like that.
You chose some dirty, tags. I mean, but I'm blaming your dad too. I think your dad was like, I don't want to do this. I can have Janine do it. Like, I'll have her do all the dirty work.
Well, my father always encouraged us. He always said if anybody complained about where they were in life, he would always say, there's a road, you got a pair of sneakers, start walking. If you didn't like where you were, you make it happen. So a lot of people said he was really rough, but he was raised in an orphanage back in the day before they took the orphanages away and they started, doing private services. So he had been left out on the streets of Chicago. And so he was in an orphanage for most of his life. And so he really didn't have a lot of sympathy or patience for people who did a lot of complaining and no action. He had great compassion for people who were given a tough deal and helping them get out of that tough deal, but he didn't have patience for people who just sat around and complained. So he was like, life owes you nothing. What are you going to make of it? Yeah, he was really big on that.
No, that's wonderful advice. I believe it. I live by it. I think it's great. But as a little kid, at some point, you had to feel like I really just want somebody to understand my situation. Did you ever feel like that? Like you wanted to whine and couldn't?
Like I wanted to what? I'm sorry.
Whine, whine.
Wine? Oh. Well, I learned to take that inside. So that's where my spirituality developed. I figured since I couldn't complain to the outside, because there wasn't really a lot of time or effort with that. There was a lot of other things. My mother was slowly dying. It took her 13 years before she passed. But, for most of my life, my mother was in a hospital bed in our living room. And so, it was just, I just thought, well, this is the way it is. This is our life. And so I have to make my life. I couldn't hand ask my family to do anything for me. They were already maxed out with the things that were going on with my mom and stuff like that. So what I chose to do was to set up my own life. And when it came to complaining, that's where I learned to meditate, although I didn't know that's what I was doing. I would be 25 years of age before I would understand what I was doing was sitting in a room and meditating. I would just go off by myself and sit and talk to God, or that's really, I called God Daddy. And that got me in a lot of trouble with some Christians, but I would call God my big daddy, like, the one that would listen to everything. And I'd just sit there and whine. And after about 15 minutes, I couldn't stand it anymore with myself. And so I'd go on and do something else, but I would always feel better. So yeah, that's kind of what I did.
Wow, I love it. You are just so full. I didn't even expect to go in this direction. That's why I just love sitting down and chatting with people. I'm finding out about the little kid who sold earthworms in between meditating and talking to Big Daddy. Like that is cool. Is that you have like what, 30 books? How many books do we have? Like nine?
I'm just now working on number 10. I'm actually asking for beta readers, and we can let your people in on that. Beta readers is free of charge. But right now I'm teaching people how to take their book on a virtual tour. So if you're an author or you want to be an author, you're more than welcome to be a beta reader for me on my next book. So yeah. So number 10.
Okay, number 10. So out
Yeah.
of the 10, have you done a memoir?
My spiritual books, Seeking the Divine, Finding the Divine, and Expressing the Divine, are as close to a memoir as could be. It's my personal relationship with God, and then how I had God answer all my questions. And so that's been one of my favorite series to write. I always knew it would be a trilogy. And so I talk about how I was seeking God, I found God, and then how you go about expressing God. How do you live after that? So we have a lot of folks who have done that, like Joseph Campbell, who received enlightenment. We have Krishna, we have Jesus Christ, we have Moses. We have a lot of saints out there. But I thought it would be really helpful to show what that is like, what that process and transformation is like when you're a single mom and you have four kids and you're homeschooling them and running a business from your house. kind of show that aspect of it.
You can't leave us there, Janine, because we want to know, how do you get an answer from God? Since you're doing all this stuff, what is the process? Please don't tell us we have to read the book. We need a little taste, a little something, how we can change our lives.
Yeah, you don't have to read my book. I don't require that of anybody.
Anyway. Yeah. We're going to read it anyway. We're going to get it. We're going to pick up a copy, but I need to know now.
The process is whatever you want to call meditation, being able to take five, no more than 15 minutes. I encourage people to start with 3-minute meditations, but set a timer and just sit with yourself. Especially if you have been raised in America, we are a do-it society. We are very much doers. And it's wonderful to see so many incredible spiritual teachers out there who are reminding people, look, we are more than just this physical avatar running around in this three-dimensional space-time. We actually are these divine beings that, you know, we're kind of shoving other souls out of the way because we wanted to get in on this ride. And this ride is Earth. And this ride is one of the most epic places in all the universe to be. It's to be cherished. It's to be savored. It is to be frisky. It's to be exciting. This is an adventure ride. It's like the e-ticket that Disney used to give out back in the day. And so it's one of those things that I like to share with people, is that in meditation, you go within and you can pray or say whatever sort of prayer is what you want, but then take that 3 minutes and listen to the response. See, the voice of the divine is very quiet. The voice of the divine is very soft. It can be easily shoved aside. And our society doesn't really respond well to introverts. Our society doesn't respond well to the contemplative. They want fast answers. They want you to answer quick. That, you know, I have time. Time is money. That kind of thing. But the contemplative life is one that I actually craved and lived on the inside, even though on the outside, I come off as very extroverted and very time sensitive.
But you seem a lot like me. Like, people will tell you that I am an extroverted introvert. Like, that's what they tell me. Like, I'm an extroverted introvert. So I can see now, like, based on when you're speaking, that you can be introverted. But I also see, like, for this situation, for this interview, you're showing more of your extroverted side, because, you know, you don't want to be boring to the audience. You don't want, you know what I mean? You have to put on this show. And you want to relay the information correctly to the audience. So that takes a certain personality. For me, I always know that I have a show personality. I come up, you know, I bring it up. I bring the energy up. Hey, Janine, how you doing? It's wonderful today. But if we were me, you know, at my house, you'd be like, Sharifa, you're just so calm.
Exactly. And the point is, I don't want to waste your community's time. They're busy people. They have a life. They have a business they're trying to run. They may be books they're writing. There may be children they're having to take care of, grandparents, grandma, mom, dad. You know, there's a lot on people's plates. And so I bring that extrovert and that very time-sensitive individual to it because I want to give them as much content as possible so that their time is not wasted, nor is yours, because we all are engaged in making this life the best we possibly can with it. My goal, my hope, is that I am able to present content in a way that will make their life just a little bit easier, make their life a little better, give them that quality of life. And sometimes it's not even that I'm giving them anything new. They've heard all this stuff before, but being able to bring a remembrance to them. Oh yeah, right. I want to work on that, you know, because they know it themselves. I think people are incredibly intelligent, and I don't think a lot of organizations really respect individual intelligences in the way that people like yourself and your community do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. It's always great to have feedback. Now let's go back to the 4-hour work week.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So in a work week, the entire week, do you work only 4 hours, or just focus those 4 hours on the things that you mentioned?
You work those 4 hours. I'm making a couple of assumptions. So let me talk about it. You can tell the mathematician kicks in. These are the variables that we are discussing. I'm making the assumption you're a solopreneur. I'm making an assumption that you've been in business 3 hours or 3 years or less. I'm also making the assumption that if you work with a team, they are a team of freelancers. They're not employees. but this still works for those people who have been in business a lot longer. If you wish to grow, this is the area that if you take 4 hours out of your work week and you do the 1 hour of prospecting, follow-up, connecting, and training yourself, if you get those 4 hours into your schedule, you will start to notice an increase in revenue. And one of the things that I talk to people about, I guarantee it, I say, I'll give you your money back. I'll actually double your money. If you do everything that I share with you when you go through my boot camps and you do that for a solid year, you will watch your income double. And I actually built a business on the side with my students, and we did that for a year because I wanted to make sure, I wanted to put my money where my mouth was on that one. And I built with them, and I did it in plain view, in public, so that people could see, and I showed them my financials and everything. And I didn't double my business, I tripled it. So I feel very confident that, and then my students saw, yeah, it depended on my students. Some only made 1.5 times more, but they always said they didn't do it every week. There were times where they couldn't do it every week. So, and then one people who just really went gangbusters ended up quadrupling 4 times their revenue, but he had started off at zero. So he was very excited to get going on that. So
I want to know more about your parameters. Specifically, you said if you've been in business for 3 years, is that a magical number? Because they say most businesses fail within the first 5 years. So do you feel if you reach this level, take these steps, you're going to be okay?
I'd like to challenge the statistic on most businesses fail in 5 years. They are correct. That statistic is correct. But I want to challenge the parameters of that statistic. And that is, many people create a business for a specific financial gain or interest level. And they don't take that into account when people start businesses. Many of the times, the reason why so many businesses, quote, fail is the business owner has achieved the purpose. And therefore, they close that chapter and they go on to build something new. So I just wanted to let people remember that. So when you hear that, it's not that they're failing, it's they have achieved the purpose that they set out. So let's say you want this business to last the next 20 years. In my case, I have a business that I want to work really hard in, so to speak. I don't work hard, but I work in that business, right? And that I want to be able to sell it or step away from it and have a general manager by the time I'm 62. So, you know, I've got 5 years to go on that one. And so when I set up this business, that was the whole process. So as a business owner, I encourage you, what is your long-term goal? And some people, when they're getting into business, it's something like, I don't know, I just want to see where it goes. Yeah, they're on an adventure, and it's called being a business owner. So those are kind of the people I'm catering to. If you want to stay in business so that you can keep being on this adventure, you may want to think about the 4 hours a week that you need to be putting in to nurture your business.
Wow, that was great information. It gave me a new perspective, especially on the people who start their business and then go, you know, achieve that goal and go in a different direction. But what I have found as far as the businesses, and I won't say they failed, is that many people have a hobby, a hustle, a passion. And when I speak, that's the question I always start out with. Are you operating a business? Or are you operating a hustle? Now, there's no judgment on what you want to do, but they're two completely different things. And so too often I find that people like, oh, I love baking cookies. You know what I mean? I love eating cookies. Okay, but does that mean you have the ability to operate and grow and build a successful cookie business? So I find that when people get to the business of it, then they're like, I don't know if I want to do this. People ask me all the time, Sharifa, what is the one business that's guaranteed to be successful? And I always tell them, it's the business that you do every day and every night, all day, every day. That's the business that's going to be successful. If you don't work your business, whether it's 4 hours or however long, it's not going to be successful. But just because it's a certain service or certain product, we can't guarantee that it's going to be successful. But I usually find is the people with the hobby or the passion that kind of go, I'm over it. And then the business is closed. I love to hear your thoughts, Janine.
Well, I operate both. So I operate a side hustle because it's my passion, but I also operate a full-time business, which is the 8 Gates. So my perspective on this is to the hustlers, to the hobbyists. I'm like, do you want to keep doing this though? I mean, if this is truly a passion, like I like making cookies. Actually, I had a lady who baked pies. Okay. I said, there are certain things you need to do if you want to continue to serve your community in this way and not suffer from decision fatigue, burnout, and to where you end up hating making pies. Now, in order for that to happen, you have to do this 4-hour nurturing a week. Otherwise, you will have decision fatigue, burnout, and you will hate making pies by the time you're done. I can't remember the name of the author, but the book, The E-Myth, he talks about the difference of being a technician versus being a CEO. And you kind of have to wear both hats. The hobbyist or the hustler usually has a burning passion to make some sort of impact. So I ask them to set very defined progress points on what is enough impact. And if they say, oh, well, I want to be the next Oprah Winfrey. I'm like, okay, you realize that Oprah Winfrey was out in the middle of winter in Chicago, hustling donuts and coffee, trying to get people to come into her studio so she could even shoot the show, right? As long as you're aware of what Oprah did the first 10 years of her business, where she and Arnold Schwarzenegger and this little guy called Sinbad all were this little Three Musketeers. Look at what they were doing for 10 years before they became a household name.
That's what you have to keep in mind. But also, yeah. It was something you said that I'm like, okay, what is that? It seems simple, but decision fatigue. Because I mean, I can break down the words. I understand what each word means. But how does that affect a solopreneur?
Because we are CEO and technician, we have not been able to make enough money to hire that executive assistant. The most we can hire usually is an accountant, a CPA, or an attorney. Those are the two people that we hire first. But if you're a CEO and you're also the technician and you're also the marketing department, you know, you have all these hats. You want to automate as many of your processes as possible so that you are doing more of the things you want to do and get paid for it, and you're able to hire out all the stuff you don't want to do. But you have to have automated systems because there is going to be a period of time where you are required to make all the decisions. You do not want to be making the same decisions over and over. And this is why email can be a drudgery for people. I don't find email a drudgery anymore because I have systems in place to handle the inflow of email that I have. Okay. So that's decision fatigue. It is common for people to make anywhere from 22 to 27,000 decisions a day. A business owner makes more. And if you're a mother of four children like I am, and they are all asking their questions, and you have clients that are asking questions, and you're having to deal with your team, and they're asking questions, do you see where you become fatigued? There comes a point in your day where a person will just go stop, or they get cranky and they start snapping at people. That's decision fatigue. This is something that I really want to help people not move into, okay? It's some people call it, I'm totally overwhelmed, I'm confused. You're not. You're not overwhelmed. You're not confused. You have decision fatigue, and it's time for you to start automating certain processes so you don't have to think it. You just chuck that question into that automated system, and it spits out the answer for you.
What do you use to automate your inbox?
Well, I set up a lot of filters so that they automatically go to other emails. So for me, I like newsletters. When somebody says, sign up for my newsletter and I'll walk you through a 10-step process to XYZ. I love that stuff. Why? Because they're giving me their wisdom for free. I don't have to pay for it. Are you kidding me? This is intellectual property. Thank you. However, I have 2 hours a week where I go through that particular email. And so that's the way I automate it. And if you have Gmail and some of the Outlook, some of those, you can actually have those newsletters come in and filter to a separate email. And that way, during that 2 hours, I read as many of those as I can. The alarm goes off and I go back to working my business. And so will I ever get through all the newsletters? No. But gosh, I have a lot of fun. And boy, do I learn a lot while I'm training myself.
Wow, I got to do the same thing because I don't have that system in place. Most newsletters, and I probably shouldn't say this because I'm going to get a lot of comments, but I unsubscribe from just about everything, unless it's someone that I know, I respect, or they're saying something that's so interesting, because I started to receive so many emails that I was like, I am overloaded, overwhelmed, like you said, overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Maybe that it was decision fatigue from deciding what I wanted to read. And I just unsubscribe from a lot of different things, unless it's something that's teaching me something that, you know, I get different ones on a not regular basis, but what, you know, I unsubscribe from a lot of the ones. Like, I have one lady who's a friend of mine, and I'm waiting for the perfect time to unsubscribe from her. She literally sends like 4 newsletters a week, not a month, like a week. And it's almost like her thought, you know, it's Monday, let me tell you about Monday's vibe. And then Wednesday is like, well, this is, and I'm like, okay, I understand that you want to have a voice and you want everybody to know about your business and your personality, but I literally would unsubscribe. But I'm scared she's going to see my name and unsubscribe and be like, Sharifa, you unsubscribed.
So what you can do is send it to email address that you build, and that way you don't have to unsubscribe. And that's a lot of the challenges, is people get into that, they're a friend, I don't want to unsubscribe. But at the same time, as a business owner, I will let you know that's kind of abusive. Unless you have said in the email or where you sign up, I will be sending 4 emails a week, that's kind of abusive. I operate on an international level. I have students all over the world who are a part of my online university. And because of that, I have to follow GDPR. And that is the international guidelines to email. And let me tell you something, those countries will block your ability to talk to your people if you do those sorts of things. I always tell people, I will contact you once a month. And you will only hear from me once a month, unless I have a special event that I want you, am inviting you to, or I'm writing a new book and I want you to be a beta reader. But other than that, you're only going to hear from me once a month. And that seems to be the sweet spot. Now, I know with a lot of people that do email marketing and they do webinars, you know, I have people that are in my inbox 2 and 3 times a week. And I'm like, how are they able to get by doing this and still go with GDPR guidelines? So that's something that I don't know how they're getting away with that, but they go into my, you know, readme.newsletters@gmail.com.
I got to be Sharifa Reads the Newsletters.
Right? Yeah, gmail.com, you know, or whatever email service you use. But it's one of those fun things that those are the emails that that get chucked in there. And if they're too prolific, then I am just looking at the headlines of what I want to see, because a lot of times they're just trying to sell you on their next product or their next webinar, and they're not really, like you say, they're not really teaching you. And that's one of the things that I love about your community and my community, is that our people trust us, that if they're getting an email from us, it is quick. If I'm quote, quote, selling you the new program I've just built, it's really short, or you're getting a bunch of content, like here are the YouTube videos I've made for you. So if you're having problems logging on to Zoom, this is what you do. You know, if you're having tech issues because we have 30 million more people on the internet, here are some things you can do. These are the type of how-to videos that I help my community out with when they are struggling.
Mm-hmm. I love how-tos. And I'll give you one example, and I feel so bad I haven't, I don't remember his company's name, but my friend Ari. He's a financial advisor in New York City. And to me, he has the best newsletters. His newsletters are like questions that he answers that people might ask about investing. But you don't, you know, most people don't have the nerve to go up to a financial advisor and ask them these little simple questions. So he answers it for, and I have learned so much about finances, investing. He not only, like, I'll give you one example. I think it was the time when it was like Bitcoin or something was going on. It was like this big hoopla about Bitcoin. And I was like, I don't even understand. The next day, I got a newsletter from Ari saying, this was the issue, this is what happened. And he broke it down in a way, I was like, oh my God, I get it. So I always subscribe to his newsletter. His newsletter comes directly into my inbox. But I think he only sends out his newsletter either once a week or when something happens in the news that he wants to explain what happened in the world. Like when people all of a sudden will say, oh, the stock market is about to crash. A couple of days later, you'll get an email from Ari saying, this is what the world sees when they say the stock market is going to crash. So to me, it's beneficial because I know I wouldn't be able to just walk up and ask that question because I would feel, and a lot of people feel dumb when they ask questions, like, I don't know what just happened. What does it mean that, you know, the stocks went up, the stock went down? So we're going to have a what market, a bull market? Okay, explain that to me. So I love newsletters like that. For me personally, I do once a week at the most. And that's to tell people what interviews I have for that week. If I have another announcement that comes up, I won't send it to the following week. And then I'll include it in that newsletter because I really want it to be like, this is what I want you to know, the information. And I've noticed a lot of people do that because on Mondays, I get 8,000 newsletters. By Thursday, I may have two. So I think Monday is the universal newsletter day, Janine.
I know, it's kind of crazy. So whatever your platform is, and no matter how often you send newsletters, just be sure you tell your people, this is what you can expect from me, and don't change it, because that is kind of a contract that you have with you and your readers. Since I'm an author of almost 10 books now, it's one of those things where it's like, I love my readers. I trust them. I trust my community, not only to support me, but of course I will support them as well. And so I just, as long as you're telling people, that's no problem. But I do take exception to the person that I have given my email address to, and the next thing I know, I'm getting emails every day. I'm like, that is not appropriate. You did not say that anywhere to me. And if it's, oh, well, that's your problem, Janine, it's like, it's easy to unsubscribe then. Very easy for me at that point. But it's all a matter of perspective. And some people absolutely love reading newsletters, and maybe they want to hear from their people every day. So I can't really say it, that's my community. I have to be careful with my community because I operate under GDPR guidelines. Yeah.
Yes, and it's a personal preference. So I don't sign up and get the ones that send the message every day. But the ones that get me is, and tell me if this happens to you, Janine, you having a conversation with someone. Maybe you're on LinkedIn, right? You're not even on the phone. You're on LinkedIn. You're in a little inbox. You're having a conversation. And the person, Bob, says, hey, Sharifa, you know, I want to send you my new book. I'm going to be a guest. Can I send you the book? And I'm like, sure. So they're like, what's your email address? So I give them my email address. They email me the PDF version of their book. Now I'm on their newsletter. I didn't subscribe to their newsletter. I didn't say I wanted to be a part of their newsletter. I didn't even say I wanted to hear from them ever again. I was just being nice and receiving the book because you were a guest on the show. Those are the ones where I unsubscribe immediately because I feel violated.
Well, and it's against GDPR guidelines. I could never do that myself because of the GDPR guidelines, the regulations that they have, which is they have to specifically agree to you consistently giving them, they've got to know that they're going on a list. And I've had that happen where people have put me on their list and they did not ask my permission. And I have a template. Remember that automation we were talking about and decision fatigue? I actually have a template that goes out that I send out to them. Are you aware that you are not in accordance with GDPR regulations? And then I'll list them all out. You know, I never clicked a box that said you had the right to do that. You just said that I could have a book.
Mm-hmm. See, I had to consult with Janine before all this stuff is happening because it's the wild, wild west sometimes. People just do whatever they want to do and they figure, you know, the worst that can happen is I unsubscribe. But it's like, so how do you enforce the guidelines, the GDPR guidelines with someone? Do you contact the host, MailChimp, or whoever their provider is? What do you do?
No, I don't. I do not enforce anything in that regard. I mean, unless it's my children and the chores, they'll be glad to let you know how I become Sergeant Mom. But no, what I choose to do is inform. Are you aware? And then I list it off and then I unsubscribe. But I alert them to it because I just make this assumption. They don't know. They wouldn't do it if they knew, right? It's just like you don't use certain images on your web pages if you're making money on that particular class, because you will get sued, right? You will have somebody contact you somewhere in the world. I had this happen to me, actually. I had used an image that was one of the Getty images and did not know this. And what really irritated me, it was when I was being an adjunct professor at a college, and it was on my blog post. Yeah, it was my business post, but this was back in the dark ages of 1997, and it was on a blog post. Well, in the year 2010, I get a letter from a firm in France, and I had ran it through my attorney, and they went, "Nope, this is legit, Janine. You've got to pay the $900. You know, because you use that image without consulting there." And so there are groups that are running around. So I choose to inform, you know, I choose to say, look, this is an issue. But the biggest thing is we can't run around being everybody else's mom, right? And so don't spend a lot of time on it. What the most important person in the world is you, right? It's Sharifa, or it's your person, right? It's like, you're the most important person in the world. You are the hero of your own adventure story. So the hero doesn't have time to run around nursemaiding everybody, okay? The hero is too busy walking their own adventure. So anytime you get really bent out of shape and you're just so frustrated with life, the universe, and everything because people are not following the rules, take a deep breath and go find your piece of nature. And if you live in the middle of a city, you always have a city park somewhere. Go hug a tree. Does that sound like Colorado or what? But it's like, go lean up against a tree, okay, if you don't want to be seen hugging it. But get out in a piece of nature and calm yourself down, because we have 8 billion people on the planet now, more than we've ever had on this planet, which means we have 8 billion different ways of doing things and living, and all those perspectives running around, and some of us running businesses, we're going to have to find ways to go coexist peacefully. Doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but we do need to find ways to coexist peacefully.
Wow, I can't think of better words to end a interview. That was just hug a tree. Like, that's the message. Forget everything else. The message from today's show is go hug a tree. Now, Janine, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. Go ahead, Janine.
Life is too short. I was quite young when I watched my mother slowly die, and that had an effect on me. I talk ignobly about death. I do not worry about other people's feelings about death. I talk about it frequently and often because of my early experiences. If you want to write a book, start writing your book. Write it now. So there's somebody out there that needs that book. If you have wanted to start a business, start it now. Get going. Whatever it is that you have always wanted to do, stop the excuses and start doing it now. Because we live for the moments. And after we live for the moments for years and years, we look back on our life and look at how far you have come. So definitely seize the day, my friend. Life is too short.
Yes. So where can we find your books? Where can we find your podcast? How do we get more, Janine?
If you want more of me, go to my personal website. No, especially your community, Sharifa. It's JanineBolin.com, and it's spelled JANINE, B as in boy, OLON as in Nevada. com, and just go there and buzz around, and that's where the Thriving Solopreneur is and that sort of thing. And then feel free to email me if you guys ever want to have a conversation. I'd be glad to touch base with you.
I know that people are definitely going to reach out to you because you are such a joy and you have an interesting perspective when people are just so boring. And it's, but you have a whole new take on just about everything. Entrepreneurship, 4-hour work week. That's all I want to do. Work 4 hours and that's it. Spend the rest of the time on the beach drinking margaritas. But that's just me. So I just hope our listeners reach out to you and get some more of your wisdom. listen to your podcast. I want to thank you for being today's guest on Ask Sharifa Videocast and Podcast. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, but I ask, please support our guest. Janine was here today to share her information, share her story with you. So please support her. Visit her website, JanineBolin.com. Also follow her on social media. Pick up one of her 10 books. Actually, 9 are available, but pick up one of the 9. Listen to her podcast because she is definitely an amazing woman. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on Ask Sharifa Videocast, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until next time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.